when we look to engage a company on this topic, it is quite common for a company to say, oh, well, our products aren't really focused on children. Most of what we do is for adults. And we do have to push back on that and say, you know, if there is any chance that children, so anyone under the age of 18, is going to be interacting with your products, then you really need to think about putting those safeguards in place and having that safety by design philosophy from the very start of development, not just post-deployment.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Executive Director of Media at EFA Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land, and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders past and present. With AI transforming business models, risks around data use, child-targeted manipulation, and online safety are rising. Are investors improving at safeguarding children's rights? Or are we still underestimating the long-term impact on returns, and more importantly, on the society? Joining us in the studio today is Ross Teverson, regional team lead across Asia and emerging markets at Federated Hermes. A bit of background, Ross has over 20 years of experience in the industry, and he began his career at Standard Life Investments and later moving on to Jupiter Asset Management as head of strategy for global emerging market equities. In both of his previous roles, he integrated ESG factors into the equity investment process, and at Jupiter, he was a member of the firm's stewardship committee. Definitely in his wheelhouse. Ross, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, let's start from the very basic explanation of talking about the S in ESG, as it's defined by super funds and investors. Tell us a bit about the background on how much Federated Hermes spends on this particular factor, and what's the latest on children's rights?
Great. Well, to put all of that in context, I should probably explain a bit about my role and about EOS, which is the part of Federated Hermes where I work. So EOS is a stewardship service provider. We're part of an asset manager, but we also have external asset owner clients, over 70 clients around the world, representing currently around $2.2 trillion of assets. And we provide corporate engagement and voting advice. And as you can imagine, with over 70 clients, we need to be pretty clear about what their priorities are. They are environmental, social, and governance related. So we survey our clients every year. We also get our clients together twice a year to really understand what it is that they want us to be focusing on in our engagement with companies. And clearly, they want us to be engaging on issues that have got the potential to materially impact long-term value creation. And in terms of how much of that is S, how much of that is social, well, if I look at the four top priorities that our clients express currently and have done for the last few years, they are board effectiveness, climate change, human rights, and human capital management. So two of those four top priorities for our clients are our social priorities. And just to add a little bit more, we have a couple of other areas where clients are becoming increasingly focused on certain areas. And those for us currently, and have been for the last couple of years, biodiversity and AI and digital rights. And the AI and digital rights piece, that encompasses a lot of focus on protecting children online, mitigating potential negative mental health impacts from the way children interact with technology. So hopefully from that, you can get a sense that social is quite a big part of what we do.
I mean, we talk about AI and what's happening digitally. On the upside, there's this enormous access to knowledge, right? But it's almost indiscriminate. So it doesn't recognize if this is the right content for you, if it's the right AI platform for you. So I can totally understand that. But can you give us a bit of an example? Can you give an example on how would this materialize when you're talking to, say, a client that says, right, we're really concerned about online safety. What do we do next?
Okay, a few different angles which we should probably explore to answer that. So I mean, you made a really good point about the fact that AI is... it can be indiscriminate in terms of the material that it's providing to users, including children. And one way we can address this is to make sure that companies are both developing and deploying AI technologies that children may interact with children in mind, you know, throughout the process.
Right.
So it's not enough for a company to develop a generative AI tool. I mean, chatbots are the most common examples of generative AI tools that children are interacting with. Not enough to develop that, and then as an afterthought, say, actually, how are we going to keep children safe when they're using this? What we're really expecting companies to do, and what we're encouraging companies to do, is to, as I say, have children in mind throughout the process. And you know, we can elaborate on that a bit later. But I think another important point to make is that these risks are really, they're really rising up in the public consciousness. And we've all seen news stories that highlight some of the worst consequences of children interacting with generative AI in a way that's clearly not been thought through.
Yes. It comes as a surprise to everybody. There's still so much of the unknown unknown.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, investors are responding. And when I talk about investors responding, I mean, the global investment community has definitely woken up to this risk. If you look at shareholder proposals in the US throughout this vote season, overall, the number of shareholder proposals was down, but actually human rights related shareholder proposals were relatively static in terms of the number being put forward year on year. Support was actually rising year on year. And mm-hmm. if you look within those social or human rights related shareholder proposals, we had quite a few that were specifically focusing on companies needing to do more, not only to protect children, but to demonstrate that those protections they're putting in place are working. So to report on the protections that they're putting in place.
Can you give an example at a stock level?
Rather than speaking about specific company names, I can explain to you what we're seeing generally from the company interactions that we're having. So right now we're undertaking a project where we're collaborating with a UK-based academic called Namisha Kurian. She's done work on the empathy gap, which I think really was something you were getting at earlier when you're talking about the way in which there are significant unintended consequences when children interact with AI. So Namisha Kurian's work on the empathy gap, it's basically saying generative AI, chatbots, these tools seem intelligent to children, and yet they have no common sense. They have no real-world context. And that's what makes it so dangerous, this perception that they are providing something informed and useful to a child, but actually they can't really understand the context. So yeah, there have been some worrying examples, some quite dangerous examples where, you know, children have asked for, you know, something to pass the time, and a generative AI chatbot has said, why don't you stick a coin in an electrical socket and see what happens?
No.
And what's happened there is that the generative AI, which has been trained on the corpus of the internet, including lots of Reddit threads, has obviously taken some content which is completely inappropriate and come out with a very dangerous suggestion to a child. So this is a long way of getting to the point that we are speaking with companies globally that have AI that children may be exposed to. So companies in the US, companies in China, companies in Japan. And we're looking for examples of good practice when it comes to the reinforcement training that they provide for AI, the mechanisms they have for children to report concerns or to block harmful content, and also stakeholder engagement, looking at what companies are doing well in those regards. Our aim is to put those findings together in terms of what is good practice and use that to inform further engagement and look to spread the word amongst companies in terms of what they can do better on protecting children.
I definitely know that when it comes to reputational risk, it just takes that one mistake, which may sound innocent, or if you're looking at, let's say, an FCMG, let's say Uncle Toby's, right? So it's a popular brand. Everyone thinks, oh, content around Uncle Toby's is going to be safe. And yet somehow, because we don't know much about AI, something happens and then suddenly it's a big risk to the business. And I presume that investors will take this seriously. But then one could be skeptical and say, well, we'll worry about that later. I'm trying to see, are there any numbers at all, like a percentage risk of, well, if you don't do anything now, this could be the X percent risk on the company valuation?
It is very hard to quantify. I mean, there have been examples of companies being slow to put in place the protections required by legislation. So back in 2023, for example, Meta was fined, I believe, $1.3 billion for breaches of GDPR legislation. And that was 5 years after GDPR rules had come into effect. You know, we had in Europe, the AI Act was finalized last year. We may well see companies, if they don't manage AI risks appropriately, incurring very substantial fines in the years to come. So you can quantify it in that sense. But I think, you know, perhaps a more useful way to look at it is that company management teams are often very heavily incentivized to maximize profits on a 1 to 3 year timeframe. And that may often involve just rolling out technologies, new AI tools as fast as possible. Now, we as stewardship service providers representing asset owners who have a very long-term time horizon and whose stakeholders are thinking about, you know, growing their wealth over 10 or 20 years, it really matters that in our role, we remind companies of those longer-term risks, the reputational risks that are hard to quantify, but are nonetheless material for their business. And there is a lot to be said for taking things a little bit slower sometimes and building a trusted brand. I would say that's exactly what Apple has done with many areas of technology. They haven't been first to market, but they have delivered products and services to market in a way that gives consumers confidence that they can trust the product.
I've definitely been to numerous conferences where super funds say, yes, we're here for 30 years, 50 years, but it's not aligned with what drives board management or CEOs who are on, you know, even 12-month bonus schemes, right? I'd like to draw your attention to Australian-based stats on what's happening here. Now, these are 2021 figures. For example, there's a statistic out there that less than 1% of companies have a specific commitment to respecting children's rights. Now, you mentioned before, it's an umbrella term. We're not talking about child labor. But even 1%, less than 1%, that's a pretty small figure. And that only 2% of S&P and ASX 200 companies disclose that they have some sort of child safeguarding mechanism or policy. These are pretty poor numbers. What is the latest? It's now 4 years on. Have we seen any improvements? Are there any best practice guides elsewhere?
I think we're still quite early on in the journey of companies recognizing how important it is for them to explicitly show a commitment to protecting children's rights. There have been some interesting developments. So in June of this year, UNICEF released guidelines that their disclosure guidelines that suggest the kind of disclosures that companies could give so that investors understand the approach that companies are taking to mitigating child risks. I mean, those apply mainly to technology companies, but not only to technology companies. And there are different disclosures that UNICEF have recommended for different sectors. So we are starting to see a discussion around, you know, what reporting should look like, how we standardize reporting such that there's a common language. And of course, we've had this common language for climate for quite a long time. And I think it's no coincidence that if you look at the UNICEF suggested reporting framework, it's extremely similar to the TCFD framework that we use for understanding a company's approach to climate risks and opportunities. So there's that to be said. I think on Australia specifically, the moves by the eSafety Commissioner to obviously limit social media access, to not allow children under 16 on social media, and perhaps more importantly, some of the codes of practice and guidelines that have accompanied that, I think that does make Australia stand out in a global context. We've had very significant regulatory developments in the UK as well. And I think another thing Australia is doing very, very well is collaborating with those other regulators. So there's been, you know, very clear lines of communication with the UK regulator and the European regulator to try and get a bit more consistency of approach, which is so important if we're going to make companies, you know, adhere to some common standards.
Now moving on to country-specific progress. I know that China has been very good at stakeholder engagement, whether it's through schools, through parent committees. Tell us more about what insights you have around what's developing in China and how any of those can be applied in other countries.
We're still in the process of this, of undertaking this project I mentioned, where we're collaborating with a UK academic on what is good practice. But what has really stood out so far is the willingness of Chinese companies to talk about what they're doing. And I think the reason they're willing to talk about what they're doing is because they are quite advanced, as you say, in stakeholder engagement. So almost all Chinese companies we've spoken to that have some technology that's child-facing, they're collaborating with the Ministry of Education. They are quite involved in what children are taught in school about how to use AI safely and how to be aware of some of the risks of using AI. So that is something that I think, or we believe, could be done much better elsewhere in the world. At the moment, it seems to be a little bit sort of case by case, a bit fragmented. In some areas, we see good parent engagement, but not great child engagement. Sometimes good engagement with educational institutions, but perhaps not with children and parents. So yeah, that's something that I think we, you know, globally needs to be worked on, but China's certainly showing us how to do it with the educational sector engagement.
I'd like to highlight a potential risk for many companies, and that is when they develop a product and they deploy it, they're thinking in their heads, this is for a 20-something or a 30-something, not realizing that children may have access to these products and they're not designed for them and potentially harmful to them. What can a fund manager like Federated Hermes do about that? Or are you doing something about being proactive and saying, hey, if you're a company that's customer facing, these are the things I would like to see?
It's an interesting question, because when we look to engage a company on this topic, it is quite common for a company to say, oh, well, our products aren't really focused on children. Most of what we do is for adults. And we do have to push back on that and say, you know, if there is any chance that children, so anyone under the age of 18, is going to be interacting with your products, then you really need to think about putting those safeguards in place and having that safety by design philosophy from the very start of development, not just post-deployment.
Last but not least, regulation. What are the reforms that investors should look out for, whether it's here in Australia or in the UK, in the US, for example?
Well, we are seeing obviously quite a lot of progress in terms of regulatory developments in some jurisdictions like Australia, like the UK, where we've had very meaningful changes over the last year. There are nuances in the legislative approach in these, or regulatory approach in these different markets. And ideally, we would have more consistency. So for example, we would like to see a statutory duty of care on companies being very explicit in legislation globally. In the US, the Kids Online Safety Act, COSA, sometimes referred to as COSPA because it also incorporates the P, privacy elements as well. The Kids Online Safety Act, it was originally put forward in 2022, I believe, but it has stalled. It still hasn't become law. It hasn't passed Congress. And at the moment, I think the challenge for that legislation is that it is too vague in terms of how it defines harmful content. And as you can imagine, there are very, very different views, a whole spectrum of views in the US as to what is deemed harmful content. And that is kind of slowing down what is, in essence, necessary legislation, we would say, in terms of making sure that children are protected and companies have that duty of care to protect children. So I'd say that's where we're at in terms of legislative or regulatory developments at the moment.
It strikes me that more needs to be done.
Absolutely. More does need to be done. And I think companies have a role in not pushing for like the bare legal minimum in each jurisdiction, but actually encouraging greater commonality of rules and regulations across markets. Because in the long term, it's actually in their interest to have a more uniform regulatory environment. Regulatory fragmentation, that just increases the risk that companies fall foul of the legislation in any one jurisdiction, because it's very hard as a global company to keep up with all these different regulatory regimes.
Absolutely. When I talk to global companies, it's never a one-minute conversation. Because I have to look at all the regulation across borders. I think we've covered a lot of ground there. We've talked about the latest, the impact of product development on children, which may not necessarily be the target market, best practice, countries that are demonstrating what can you do to be more effective. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on this topic?
I think we talk a lot about risk. And of course, there are very significant risks that companies, investors, society as a whole need to mitigate. There are also, I think, some excellent opportunities for generative AI to be used responsibly and for children to be educated on how to use it well, so that when they're adults, without any of these protections that regulation currently gives to children, when they're adults, they're able to get the full benefit of what generative AI can bring, and are fully aware of the risks as well. So that opportunity to have the next generation of users better informed using AI more productively, I think that's something that we should also focus on as well.
Definitely. Well, if you start from a young age, then you can carry through those good habits as you go and become good citizens. Ross, you've been fantastic. Thank you for sharing your insights. Once again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Greener Way. This is Michelle Baltazar. Thank you for listening.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.